everyone. I'm Ashley McManus, Senior Director of Global Marketing at SmartEye. Welcome to the Human-Centric AI Podcast, where each episode we feature thought leaders doing cutting-edge work in the AI space. A little about us, SmartEye is the global leader in human insight AI, technology that understands, supports, and predicts human behavior in complex environments, bridging the gap between humans and machines for a safe and sustainable future. With its recent acquisition of emotion AI pioneer Affectiva and iMotions, the leading biosensor software platform, we've joined forces to create a true integrated powerhouse in delivering unparalleled insights into human behavior. We have a special episode today featuring iMotions product specialist Dr. Pinella Berlot and Deputy CEO of SmartEye, formerly co-founder and CEO of Affectiva, Dr. Rana Al-Kayubi. Mental health research takes many forms, but what unites it can be the application of biosensors and physiological methodologies to better understand and ameliorate patient experiences and outcomes. The two had a great discussion on emotion AI in mental health applications, the role of biosensors in mental health research, and where this technology is heading in the future. Let's listen in to learn more.
All right. Hi, everybody. I hope you're all doing well. I am Rana Al-Kayubi, Deputy CEO at SmartEye and formerly the co-founder and CEO of Affectiva. I'm also currently investing in early stage AI companies, and I teach at the Harvard Business School how to bring AI into our businesses. So very excited to be here. By way of background and just to contextualize this conversation, SmartEye is the leader in human insight AI, and they've been in market for the last 20 years, bringing technology to a whole bunch of industries, but especially in the automotive industry, driving safety and saving lives. About a year and a half ago, Affectiva and SmartEye joined forces. About a year ago, we also brought in another company to our family, iMotions. So iMotions is the leading platform for multimodal sensing and behavioral human insights. So I'm very excited to be here today with Pinella. She is a product specialist at iMotions. I'll give her a chance to introduce herself in a second, but I just wanted to contextualize how this conversation came about. So we were in our HQ office in Boston having lunch, and we sat next to each other serendipitously. We got talking, and we very quickly realized that we both have a passion for the application of this technology in the mental health space. So if you know me, you know that this is an area that is near and dear to my heart. I've been evangelizing about the use cases of mental health for many, many years. So I'm excited to dive into how can we apply emotion AI, multimodal AI into this topic of mental health. But before we do that, Pinella, I am so excited to have you on here today. You are a kick-ass, like, rock star. How about you tell us first a little bit about your background, your story, and how you ended up being at iMotions?
Sure. Yeah. Hi, everyone. So my name is Pinella. I am a product specialist here at iMotions. Going backwards to end up with why I'm at iMotions, I'm originally from Denmark. Moved over to the U.S. around 10 years ago, where I pursued an education in neuroscience, which may sound crazy, but at the time there was no neuroscience degree in Denmark, so I knew I had to leave. And so I ended up over at Berkeley, did the rest of my bachelor degree there, really dived into understanding things like how do we become who we are, you know, how does the environment change the way our brain works so we might be more vulnerable to developing anxiety. These are the types of questions I have always been and still am very, very interested in addressing. I ended up doing my PhD in neuroscience too, diving even deeper into brain development, and then ended up as a postdoc at Harvard Medical School in MGH, where I dived even deeper into it and combined it with sensory systems and all that good stuff. So understanding how touch can make us more or less stressed, for example. And then totally by chance, just like our lunch conversation, I got a call from a recruiter that said, hey, do you want to be a product specialist at iMotions? I had no clue what a product specialist was. I was a postdoc. I was just doing research, you know, wet lab, pretty very standard for any researcher out there. I feel for you. You have long days. It's hard work. Thank you so much for doing it. I was ready to leave. So I was on a yes note that day. And 2 weeks later, I was hired.
Oh, wow.
And so, yeah. And so that's how I ended up here. And now I spend my time talking to people that are doing all these different types of biosensor research, all different levels, all different types of integrations. And, you know, a lot of people using facial expression analysis, a lot of people using eye tracking. Super cool.
Yeah, what an incredible background. So I want to kind of dig a little bit deeper into what you do at iMotions. So first of all, like, explain to us in your own words, what does iMotions do? Like, what's the technology? What's the platform? And then what is this, you know, what's a product specialist?
I'm still trying to figure out the last part. So let me start with the first. iMotions is a software platform. We do not develop any hardware technology or anything like that. What we focus on is taking the technology that Affectiva and SmartEye, all the different types of, there's so many different hardware companies out there, which is amazing. And our whole philosophy is, how can we take all of that data into one platform so we can synchronize it, streamline the entire process of doing research? That means you can do a study on a person with an EEG headset, an eye tracker, facial expression analysis, electrodermal activity, heart rate, all at the same time. And all of it is just synchronized into one platform. And so that's really the power. And then, of course, like, it's user-friendly. We can do a bunch of good analytics, but it's really the synchronization and the customization of everything that you can do. That's what we are. That's what we do.
Yeah. And for anybody who's done multimodal research or has attempted to do research studies where you're pulling data from multiple sensors and signals, it's very challenging. You want to spend the majority of your time designing the experiment, looking at the data and the results. And if you're not using iMotions or a platform like iMotions, you get sucked into just like dealing with synchronizing the data. And if you mess it up, basically rubbish in, rubbish out. So
yeah, no, you lost your study. No, I remember during my PhD, I was sitting with TTL pulses and being like, okay, I'm starting everything at the same time. Right. You know? It was a hassle. In terms of what a product specialist is, we have a very varied role. So basically we are consultants and tech experts at the same time. So you can come and I can consult you on, you know, what are your research needs? Think about the strategy, what technology will work best for your research question. I also spend my time testing new technology. Mm-hmm. So the newest EEG headsets, the newest VR headsets, the newest, coolest wearable sensors, you know, all of that good stuff. I spend my time just figuring out, okay, do we trust this? Is this on par with something that can be published in a journal? Because first and foremost, iMotions is a platform for academics. That's how it was first developed. We do have a huge amount of commercial clients that are using iMotions now. Most of those clients are really interested in having, you know, highly validated scientific data that they can share with, you know, their board members or their clients and other people. So yeah, that's what I do. And then we also develop into our own tracks where I have focused a lot on thinking about strategy, thinking about, you know, working on specific subfields like the mental health.
Yeah. I was in the office yesterday and iMotions was running their one of their academies where they had researchers from all over the world in the office kind of go through the iMotions platform, but all of the different sensors that are built into this platform, including, you know, Affectiva's emotion AI. Mm-hmm. And it really made my day to be into that and also kind of hear all of the varied use cases. It's incredible. Mm-hmm. It also, yeah, it always blows my mind just hearing how people are using this to, you know, all sorts of things related to human behavior and human decision making. It's amazing. Yes.
Totally agree. I'm always blown away. I love seeing the new research that's coming out from people. You know, instead of doing the research now, I'm kind of just like facilitating that other people are doing it, which is really gratifying. And there is so much cool stuff. I mean, predicting what type of songs are going to be the most popular ones, things like that, that I probably wouldn't really have thought about. And then things like, okay, how can we actually develop treatments for really, really terrible diseases, right? And so there's everything from fun stuff to really, really cool, important stuff.
So also what people may not realize is iMotions and Affectiva have been partnering together for the last, 8 years or so. And so our emotion AI technology has been integrated into iMotion. Mm-hmm. And in fact, going to back to the mental health theme, one of the early researchers or adopters of the iMotions platform is Professor Stephen Vannoy from UMass Boston, who uses the iMotions platform to conduct research studies around mental health, depression, identifying facial and vocal biomarkers of even suicidal intent, mm-hmm. which is just very important work. So for me, what I find really awesome about the work we're doing in the mental health space is the gold standard in this space is still a survey. You still ask people, if you go mm-hmm. into a doctor's office and the doctor wants to know if you're depressed or anxious, et cetera, they literally ask you from a scale mm-hmm. on one, from mm-hmm. one, how depressed are you?
Yes. Yeah.
And we have an opportunity to change that and bring mm-hmm. data to the equation. Mm-hmm. So can mm-hmm. you talk a little bit about what you're seeing in terms of iMotions customers who are kind of focused on the health and specifically yeah. health space?
Yeah, no, I mean, just to empathize what you just said there, it is kind of mind-blowing that we have all this technology and we even have research that's showing that it works and we're not using it. So it's not being applied, right? And that's also how our lunch conversation sprung out of, like, how many clients do we actually have at iMotions that are doing research in the mental health field? And I couldn't answer that question, which yeah. is why I then went back to my computer and was like, I'm going to find the answer to that, because that is terrible. How have I not come across people constantly that are doing research with biosensors in the mental health space? And so we do have some people that are doing it, but we don't have that many. And yeah. so this is a space that has huge room for growth. What I'm seeing a lot is that people are interested in characterizing mm-hmm. the ways in which our biology is affected by mental illnesses. That is what I will say I see the most in terms of at iMotions. If you dig into the literature, you also see a lot of upcoming or newer technologies that are trying to understand how we can predict changes in mental health. So, for example, in people with suicidal tendencies or maybe that have already been admitted once and now have been released, when are they likely to commit suicide again or do a suicide attempt? Can we use biosensor technology to capture that and to intervene before something happens? And the same is true for bipolar. When do you go into a manic state? When do you go into a very deep depressive state? How can we use biosensor technology to catch it before they really fall low? So those are two ways in which you can really do a lot of clinical basic science. Yeah. And then there is, of course, the interventions. We have people at MGH. In fact, so I know this is being mentioned and being broadcasted down here as a little advertisement. We do have a webinar that's coming up in January next year. And there we're going to be talking with Dr. Ryan Jacoby, who's doing research at Mass General Hospital, where she's also utilizing VR and different types of treatment intervention protocols to figure out, well, how can we reduce compulsive behaviors in not just one group of mental illnesses like OCD, but a huge amount of different types of groups of mental illnesses that are characterized by compulsive behaviors. So really characterization, prediction, and treatments. That's where I see it the most.
Yeah, which is, it's absolutely fascinating, this whole space. Can you give an example of what would it look like? What are we finding from the different biosensors and the different channels of information? Like which channels, which type of data is most informative or kind of can give us a clue? Or do we even know, right?
Yeah, which one is most informative? I think, oh man, everybody, I'm going to have so many enemies if I answer that question.
I was saying something at Affectiva. We did a few pilot studies with a couple of pharma companies where we looked at kind of the facial and vocal biomarkers. We also looked at skin conductance, and what we found in that study, and I think there's opportunity to do a lot more of this, mm-hmm. Is that every signal gives you a little bit of a clue, right? It's not like they're not exclusive, but they're adding information to provide more of a holistic picture.
Oh, 100%. And that's the whole rationale for the multimodal approach. There, no single sensor is going to give you a solid answer. And if you do look through the different research, the different publications where they are trying to predict changes in mental state, it is one sensor is usually never enough to give a solid prediction for what's going to be happening. What you do need is having both the voice captured, having screen time captured, having, you know, the GSR captured, EEG captured, face captured. I think what I would like to mention, though, is how do we want to do this? Do we want to do this research in the lab? Do we want to do this research in a person's everyday life? Right? Because those are two very different strategies. And when we start talking about how those different strategies have their different pros and cons, then we can start speaking more specifically about which sensors are better in each case.
How biosensors are used in the mental health space and what kind of sensors. So maybe you can give us an example of this kind of in the lab versus at home longitudinal research, which sensors are better for each?
So there is I would find a biosensor and it's probably been used. Okay. Now the question is how much has it been used and how reliable are the results from that data? In the laboratory, obviously there's much more work that's been done. Some of the sensors that we see at iMotions that are being used a lot in the lab in the mental health space are things like facial expression analysis, it's galvanic skin response, it's also EEG to a certain extent, but I actually really, really like that it's these less invasive types of sensors that we see used the most. For example, galvanic skin response is usually a device that's sitting on your hands and capturing how there are changes in your sweat. Facial expression, just using a webcam to capture how your face is moving. That means it's relatively non-invasive. And there we can capture even, you know, subtle, that non-conscious changes that are happening in response to seeing something or experiencing something. So in the lab, it's a lot about triggering different behaviors, right? We show them a video, we show them a picture, you know, PTSD, exposure therapy. It's a lot about like giving them information, see how they react. Do they habituate over time? That's, for example, one use case. In the field, we are talking about people that will have to wear something all the time without having to necessarily take it off and be too bothered by it. So in that case, we want to think about things like heart rate. There's a lot of really good heart rate sensors out there that can easily capture changes, you know, both when you're moving and sitting down. Now, not all of the wearables are equally as good. I do want to point that out. And feel free to come to us and we can give you feedback on which ones we have tested in-house, which ones we think there's solid literature for. But heart rate is a really solid one that can give you a lot of stuff. And galvanic skin response as well in the field, which is nice because now you start translating what do I see in the laboratory that's also happening in the field. And then how can we actually start predicting very confidently how different mental state changes are occurring.
Yeah, and this is great too, because then you can also create a baseline for the individual over time, right? Like, I think the really powerful opportunity here is both multimodal sensing, but then longitudinal sensing too, right?
Like
enough data about the person and you can kind of understand when the person deviates from their baseline and that call for intervention.
100%. I think an underrepresented sensor is the accelerometer. That can be used both in the lab and in the field. So there are different types of accelerometers. In fact, many times your phone has like an internal accelerometer. Your fancy watch has an accelerometer. That's how it measures your behavior during sleep. So when your watch is telling you, oh my God, you moved around a lot last night. Did you not sleep well? That's based on accelerometry that's embedded within that phone, in that wristband. And that in itself is very informative because now we can start understanding not just what's happening during the day, but also how they're behaving during the nighttime when they're sleeping. Does a particular drug influence their sleeping behavior? You know, do they actually sleep better? Those are the types of things you can also start asking.
Can the data collection be done through the mobile phone?
Yes. The answer is yes. We have a platform that is totally mobile.
So basically what that means is that every participant in your study will have an app on their phone and they can collect sensor data to that, which is then exported into a cloud that you as a researcher have access to. That's really important from a research perspective, as we already talked about, because if you want to do in the field research, you obviously can't have a desktop or a laptop following the person around constantly.
Right.
Now there are limitations in terms of, okay, what are the types of sensors you can then use? Right now, we, as I mentioned, we really believe in research grade sensors. So we are not sticking EEG headsets on people and saying, now you go live your life with your phone. These are the wearable sensors that I was mentioning, like heart rate sensors. We're working on getting integrated with the Garmin watches. We have VeriSense from Shimmer. They have a galvanic skin response wristband as well. So yes, that it's super exciting.
I'm a fanatic Whoop wearer and yeah. I love it. The Oura Ring.
Yes, yes, we have. We have heard of those, and we are diligently working through getting all of the different cool sensors to be integrated. We're taking it step by step, so bear with us. But yes, if people have particularly good use cases and you're saying, hey, we are ready to invest in this and all we need is that this one sensor can be used in your platform, come to us. We're all ears.
Yeah. And I think I've been really diving into the just the kind of in general other types of sensors. So, for example, I'm going to call out Nix Biosensors. They're a local company, by the way. We should talk to them.
Okay.
And they are about to launch a sweat biochemistry pad. So it's a patch, but
yes,
it measures not your sweat levels like we do with skin conductance sensors, but it's the biochemistry of the sweat.
Yes.
How hydrated you are, et cetera. Have you come across them?
Yes, I have come across them and I think they're super cool. Some of them can measure actual cortisol levels, which, by the way, if anybody has ever done an ELISA in the lab, which is the biochemical way of taking a blood sample and then identifying, you know, just the cortisol percentages in one blood sample compared to another, it's a hassle. It takes a long time, huge amount of variability. So having that patch you can just put on a person and say, you know, go do your thing, go give that talk, go
right,
take that test. That is huge. And then imagine correlating that with heart rate and you can see the timeline, the moment to moment changes in cortisol, in your voice pitch, in your heart rate, all of it, you can correlate it together. It's going to be a really strong data set. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. The other kind of class of sensors that I'm really interested in. I actually just bought one myself, but I haven't installed it yet. A real-time glucose monitoring.
I did get one. Well, it's not a real-time glucose thing. I got one of the old-fashioned ones where you constantly have to At one point it really starts hurting, doesn't it? That is, you know, I have not come across that sensor much in the mental health space.
Yeah.
There might be a little subfield there, but I think, and I might be wrong, but I think that might be more relevant for different types of physical conditions, which also would be, obviously, is super
right,
important to intersect,
right,
and it intersects a lot with mental health. So definitely a sensor that would be cool to add on at one point that I would highly recommend people to pay attention to.
Yep. So a lot of the work that iMotions does is in the academic kind of space and empowering researchers to run these studies and find these biomarkers. But what I'm also like equally excited about is how some of these findings have now crossed over to the commercial world. And as you know, I'm on the board of an early stage VC-backed company called Videra Health, and they are a remote patient monitoring solution that is very focused on behavioral health, and they work with addiction clinics across the country and mental health clinics across the country. And basically, the idea is they have this app. Using the camera and the microphone on your phone, you are able to record short video sequences throughout the week, and then using technology like emotion AI and vocal analysis, and also NLP, natural language processing, and the word thing, they can then tie that to stress, anxiety, and depression scales. So I know that you've worked a little bit with them. Do you want to, I'm curious, your thoughts on this kind of moving from just doing this research in academia to actually bringing it to practice in industry.
Yeah, I think that goes really well with the comment about suicidality and detection and prevention. We start in the research world with these big questions, right? And then we want to characterize, what does it mean to look suicidal, or what does it mean to look depressed? And then we want to backtrack and see, what does the progression of leading up to looking like that actually look like? And then you want to develop some really good predictive analytics, so you can look at, okay, how is it changing over time? When is it we need to intervene? Then the academics can also look at interventions, all of that good stuff. But at that point, when we have that type of data set, we can move into commercial spaces and we can develop tools that can actually utilize and apply all of that really gold knowledge to make it accessible to people, to make it accessible to hospitals, so that we can create, we can start saying everything that's being developed by the researchers is actually also being really useful for the people out there, which I think as a former academic is something that can be very frustrating. You know, you're looking from outside, and you just don't see that this knowledge that's being gained inside of academia is really getting spread. So I think companies are critical in spreading that knowledge and making it accessible. They're often much more productive in that process. Not that academics couldn't spread all of it themselves, but I think teamwork makes the dream work here.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, that's how I would see it. It should be teamwork between academics and commercials. And Videra Health is a great example of how biosensor knowledge is now being applied. At iMotions, we do have people that are both developing, you know, the characteristics, figuring out, okay, what does it mean to look like you have a particular type of mental illness. We also have both commercial and academics that are testing tools. So that could, for example, be testing an app and see, okay, how effective is it in these different types of functionalities? So we do work with both populations here. I love that, because you're really seeing the transfer of knowledge.
Yeah. And actually, this is one of the main reasons why I spun out of MIT and started Affectiva is, mm-hmm. I loved doing the core research, and I really believe in the true kind of potential and transformative power of unlocking and unearthing these discoveries and findings. But I was also somewhat frustrated, because I felt like mm-hmm. we were finding all these like incredible, you know, knowledge bases about how humans behave, but it wasn't mm-hmm. applied in the real world. And mm-hmm. so kind of the impetus for starting Affectiva was like, okay, we have this unique mm-hmm. opportunity to scale mm-hmm. a lot of these and apply them in different industries. And so, I love that iMotions is straddling these mm-hmm. two worlds, and we're mm-hmm. committed to bringing our technology out of the lab and into the hands of people who need them.
Yeah, no, I really resonate with that. Something that frustrated me a lot was, and I don't want this to come off wrong, but something that frustrated me was the lack of imagination and the lack of courage that sometimes defines academia, where you have this crazy idea like, oh my God, let's develop a device that vibrates in just the right way to make people feel more relaxed, right? That I don't think that sounds that crazy, but it comes up in academia as being like, well, why would you do that? And here is like the long list of why these things wouldn't work.
Right.
Sometimes we need people that are going to say, well, there might be a long list of reasons why things won't work, but I'm going to try it anyways. Right. And that's where I think commercial startups in particular are super courageous. And
absolutely agree. Courage, courage is a good word. All right. I think actually we've always thought about, mm-hmm. and you mentioned it a little bit too, like how can we take this biosensor information, but pair it with contextual information? Maybe it's mm-hmm. your or it's like, what experience are you going through? What are you watching? What are you experiencing? Mm-hmm. Can you say a little bit about that? The importance of context?
Oh, yeah. And I think that's where in the field research is, that's what they can give you, right? There's a lot of things that in the field research, there's more confounding variables, la, 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 la. But you're going to get much more contextualization. So something you, for example, can do and that has been published is that if you're using the microphone and capturing audio on a phone, at the same time as you're gathering biosensor data, you can also get, what is the ambient noise level? And then you can start correlating, okay, ambient noise, when that's high, it actually affects people pretty negatively. And you can also look at things like the duration of conversation. The more you're talking, the more stressed you get. Isn't that crazy? Like, I didn't think of that. Like, there are days where I talk more and there are days where I talk less.
But it's exhausting.
It is exhausting. And it's exhausting for those reasons. And so contextualizing it and capturing that with the biosensor is super important. The challenging part is how to do that, right? And that's where in, you know, different apps oftentimes, and as well with the iMotions app, like it's really important to have what we refer to as an event marker, where a person can say like, hey, something just happened. You know, I just had a panic attack, or I'm currently having a panic attack, because then you can start contextualizing the physiological data with the actual experience that's going around.
Very cool. To what extent can you apply all of this to different languages and cultures?
Yeah. So I'm just going to say a few things here. Every culture struggles with mental illness. And in that sense, all of these biosensors will be relevant for that. Are the products, the end products, like an app, for example, or the intervention strategies to treat mental illnesses based on the biosensor data going to be equivalent for all cultures? No, not necessarily. That could be culture specific. And that's one of the hurdles in science in general, that there's a lot of underrepresented groups of people that are not being studied enough. And I'm talking both within one culture and in between different cultures. The Western culture usually has much more research that are in these like high-tech levels. So that is something where we need more research. And I probably can't give you a confident answer on that.
I would say from the facial analysis side, we've spent a lot of time making sure that the data we use to train and validate these algorithms is diverse as possible. And it's diverse across age, gender, ethnicity, even facial appearances, like do you have a beard? Do you wear the hijab? Things like that. So that's just to ensure that the underlying facial analysis models are not biased in any way. Which has definitely been an evolution over the last, I'd say 10 years or so when we started doing this research. Because of the acceleration of technologies like deep learning, the data becomes really important.
Yeah, no, for sure. And it is I think going along those lines, there's plenty of research studies showing that people express themselves differently depending on the cultures that they're in, right? And this is not so much about whether or not someone smiles when they're happy. That's very universal. Everybody more or less do that. The question is more, when do they do that? And so does that mean when they have a particular facial expression that is a predictor of being depressed? Well, maybe that is true for one culture, but not another. And so those are the types of questions that we still haven't answered yet.
Yeah. All right. Now let's switch to questions around consent. How do we consent people
about doing this research? Yeah,
and the importance of consent.
I mean, it is very important. In a lab. So the way that is used, that I usually see it done from the iMotions perspective, is the very classical way of asking them, "Are you comfortable with doing this? These are the types of sensors that we are going to be recording. This is how we're going to be using the data. It's not going to be published. You know, it's not like your face is going to be everywhere on the streets now. It's just going to go into a local computer, and that's where it's going to be used for data analysis. Your files will be deleted after." The whole IRB process of getting approved to do these studies is an ethical challenge as well. So I think researchers in general really put a lot of time and effort into making sure that what they're doing is following the right guidelines. I think the question becomes more complicated when we're asking people to do use wearables. And so in everyday life, where these sensors, it is out of the lab. And what if people forget that they're, which is kind of like what the researchers want, right? Like we want them to forget that they're being a part of a study, because now we want them to behave naturally. But when people behave naturally, they sometimes do strange things. And so we're going to be capturing all of that data. Obviously, we're not talking about a full recording where we're going to see, it's not like a drone is following them around with a video, right? We're measuring their heart rate. Like you could say that these are not particularly invasive metrics to get out on the other side, but it is some, like, what if you change your mind? In the iMotions app for our platform, would you have the ability for a person to pause and stop the study at any time? So if they do change their mind, they can do that. And I hope that's what it's like with most apps out there. Although I don't know of any other apps that really enable multimodal biosensor research. Mm-hmm. That I think iMotions is kind of a standalone in that part. But there's obviously a lot of apps out there that might be measuring constantly your microphone. I mean, Instagram, Uber, you know, Grubhub. They know when you're hungry. They know they know when you want to see things. And so we do have a huge consent crisis in that case. And I think continuing to have this very professional academic perspective in terms of how we're collecting consent is for at least for us very important.
Yeah, and I think 100%. Like, it's so important not only that we consent people and ensure that we're getting people's opt-in, but also kind of explaining in a very transparent way, what is the data being collected? Yes. How is it being collecting? Who's going to get access to that data? Because if it's mental health related data, mm-hmm. you want to be very careful about who gets control.
Absolutely. Especially with the way that it works in the US with insurances and healthcare, that is something you want to be super duper mindful of. And at least from an iMotions perspective, all the data is local. It is private. It is only the researchers that have access to it. And that's critical. It becomes different when it starts being a commercial app that you're actually paying for. Then you want to make sure that they have some ethical considerations there.
Absolutely. Can you comment on how you gather data that is representative enough and how much improvement do you see based on the longitudinal data of one person? All right. So on the data that's representative enough, again, because iMotions is basically a platform that integrates multiple sensors. So you kind of want to ask that question of each of the underlying technologies. So with Emotion AI, for example, we're sticklers for making sure that this data is trained on very global, you know, and diverse human beings. It's mm-hmm. one of the things we take pride in. And mm-hmm. it's not only on the training side, but it's on the validation side too. Our data sets are quite challenging and they're very diverse as well. And that's the only way we can uncover if there is bias kind of encoded in the algorithm against a particular underrepresented population. So that's how we do it on the face side. I would imagine that there's very similar approaches on the voice and physiological side as well.
Mm-hmm. I mean, with eye tracking, there are challenges. I have blue eyes. Eye tracking quality goes down when you have lighter eyes. This is all about, you know, the way that things, the biology of it. And that's a challenge, right? So how do we make sure that the sensors are representative? That when we're getting data from people with different skin colors, are we getting the same data? And people with different eye colors, are we getting the same data? And can we group it together? And that's, again, a call for action to all of the researchers out there, because we need more studies on that. We need people to invest time in just looking at the basic differences in the quality of the data between people that have different eye colors, skin colors, thickness of skins, things like that. So yeah, that's an ongoing project, but many of the sensors are also very capable of working fine. And for that, I will say making sure that your group is big enough, your research group is representative.
I love it.
Yeah.
Like, you exactly say that. I love yeah. it.
Like, that's really, you know, on the research end, really got to make sure on that. In terms of the second part of your question, as to how does longitudinal data really improve the results or the outcomes or the predictions? Many times individual data is really good to predict individual outcomes, and individual group data is really good at predicting group outcomes. So when you do design studies and you want to assess what's happening, what's going to be happening in the long term, it's really, really challenging. It's by no means easy to develop all of these algorithms that we've been mentioning, Bedera Health, and that other apps are doing too, where they have an algorithm and they can predict what's the likelihood of you going into a depressed state, or that you are currently in a depressed state. It's really, really complicated. And it's not that just getting more data is always better. The quality of the data is key. I think the most important thing is the complementarity. of the data, and then also having a lot of people. So it's usually easier when when you have data from a lot of people and then group it together and then you start seeing trends, then we can start parsing out, you know, very unique individual differences, because we ultimately we're talking about trends. Everybody is unique, and most algorithms will not be capable of capturing your uniqueness all the time.
I love that. And so wrapping up, what is one thing you are most excited about for the future? Especially maybe as it relates to mental health, but beyond too.
Yeah. That's such a big question. There's so many answers to that. I think it's really exciting how so many people are so open to using wearables. And, you know, you're showing off your watch and you have all these different types of sensors at home, which probably is the truth for the most of the people listening in here as well. If we can leverage that optimism and excitement among people to also improve mental health, I think that would be fantastic. And so that's what I'm most excited about, how we can make this a daily part of our lives, that we think about, oh, you know, if I'm sick physically, I'm going to take care of myself. If I am noticing that my mental health isn't doing well, well, then I'm going to do something about it as well. And it's totally commonplace. And now we have strategies in place, not just language, but the strategies, technology that can go in and say, I'm noticing your heart is beating really fast right now. You know, like maybe take a moment and do those exercises that you know you're supposed to be doing that I can see you haven't been doing for a few days. So yeah, that's probably where I'm most excited and yeah, see a lot of potential.
Yeah, it is very hopeful. And being able to bring data to something that is often like hidden and not necessarily observable to a person or even kind of an outside people, I think that's very exciting. All right, so we have a couple of call to actions. First of all, if you are tuning in and this is an area that is of interest to you, we would love to collaborate. So reach out to me or Pinilla, and maybe we can find ways to work together and bring this technology to scale and help more and more people. And then the second is don't miss our upcoming webinar. I don't know if we can. Yes, you can register here and we'll be talking about how iMotions has been and is exploring this space of mental health research. And with that, thank you everyone for joining us this afternoon or this morning or this evening, wherever you are. And to be continued. And thank you for joining me. You are a true rock star. I'm so inspired.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
All right. Bye, everybody.
I thought Rana and Pranilla's discussion was super engaging, dynamic conversation about what's possible with biosensors and mental health research. From what's being done today to ethics and everything in between, I'm really excited to see what the next 10 years brings in getting us closer to understanding mental health. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Don't forget to subscribe to the Human-Centric AI podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts for new episodes. We're also on social media, so please reach out to us on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Instagram to share any feedback you have on the show and weigh in on the discussion using hashtag #HumanCentricAIPodcast. Don't forget to rate us and comment with your feedback to help make the podcast more discoverable for others. Until next time, thanks for listening.